Welcome. I'm so happy you are taking the Nutritious Life Certification course. This has been a lifelong, or at least as long as I've been a dietitian, dream of mine to do. I work one-on-one with clients. I have for over a decade. And when I started doing that, I wanted to be able to help not just that one person in my office, but I also always had this dream of helping other dietitians and trainers and anyone in the health and wellness space help more people. So with this course, my goal is to reach as many people as possible that can then spread the word, as I say, serve it up to someone else, to help as many people out there live their most nutritious life. In addition to the webinars, there are supplemental materials which will give you even more information. They'll be a little bit more detail-oriented with more research and specific lists of info, and you can use those for yourself and or all of your clients. Remember, this is all about spreading the word, serving up a nutritious life to as many people as possible. So live a nutritious life and pass it on to everyone you reach. One of the first things I ask someone when they come into my office is, what are you doing now? What is your normal diet right now? And they'll say, well, I'm doing the Atkins thing for breakfast, the 90s fat-free thing at lunch, and then all hell breaks loose for dinner and I'm eating everything in sight. This is all too common because people don't understand what high protein is, what low carb is, what any new trend is. People are inundated with information and they're trying to put it all together. And what happens is they just become one big old mess. So I start with the basics when someone comes in and I ask them if they've ever cooked. Oftentimes, unfortunately, many people haven't. But I say, have you ever seen then maybe your mom or your dad or your sibling or your friend or your spouse cook something and say, what happened? Why did my bread not rise? What happened to the frittata? Sometimes that's because just one ingredient was missing. Well, the same thing can happen with our diet. Have you ever noticed that you're totally lethargic or you just don't feel good? Well, that may be because you're missing a major nutrient. So I start with the macronutrients because all of them are important for the recipe of your health and weight loss. So think about that recipe, whether it's bread not rising or a frittata not frittataing. You need all the components to make it perfectly tasty, just like you need all three of these macronutrients to make your health the healthiest, fittest, strongest, and leanest you can possibly be. So what are the components when it comes to nutrients of a healthy diet? Well, let's start with the macronutrients. The macronutrients, and you may already talk to your clients about this, but sometimes what happens, and this used to happen to me when I first started counseling, I used to get into the nitty-gritty details of carbohydrates, and you know what? I would lose some people's attention because really, I mean, I didn't have that much fun listening to it in nutrition school. That nitty-gritty science sometimes really, you know, turn somebody's head the other direction because they didn't go to school for nutrition for a reason. They don't want the nitty-gritty science, but they do want to know and need to know the bigger, broader facts about carbohydrates, fats, and protein. Those are the three macronutrients that provide us with calories. And like I was talking about that recipe before, we need all three for us to have our healthiest lives. I think all of the macronutrients are misunderstood, but the one that stands out the most to me that's the most misunderstood is the one I'm going to start with. You probably have already guessed it. Carbohydrates. The reason they are so misunderstood is because people go one of two ways. Sometimes people take them out altogether thinking, I don't need any carbohydrates in my diet. Or other people are going along their merry way eating bread and pasta and rice and also a whole lot of fruit and yogurt and vegetables and other packaged processed foods and don't even realize that they're getting carbohydrates from all of those places. I like to tell people that they need carbohydrates. You need carbohydrates because we need energy. They're the main fuel source for your brain. And if you're an athlete, you need even more energy. And you even need energy to be able to even lose weight. You need energy to think, to breathe, to build muscle. You need carbohydrates. What I like to do when I'm teaching people about macronutrients for the first time is explain to them really the basics. Where do you find these things? Many times people come in and say, oh, I don't need any carbohydrates. Yet I see 4 servings of fruit, I see yogurt, I see a whole lot of vegetables in their diet. And I say, oh, actually, I think about 50% of your diet comes from carbohydrates. And they look at me like I should take down the master's degree diploma that I have on the wall, because they have no idea what carbohydrates are. You find carbohydrates in everything from dairy, fruit, vegetables. It's not just in the starchy types of foods we associate carbohydrates with, like rice, pasta, and bread. So that's the first thing I explain to them, where they find carbohydrates. So now I've just told you, and you probably know, fruits, vegetables, even dairy. You're finding carbohydrates in all of these other places. It's not just about the bread and pasta, folks. Okay, when it comes to the starchy foods like breads, pasta, potato, people also make big mistakes there. They end up eating too many refined carbohydrates. And those are the type of carbohydrates that I like people to steer clear of completely. Does that mean that you'll never be able to go to your local Italian restaurant and have gnocchi? No. There is a time and place to indulge in a conscious manner, but we'll get to that way later on. Right now, it's about what I really want people to get when they eat their carbohydrates. So when it comes to carbohydrates and it comes to the starchy foods, I want you to get the most nutrient-dense, starchy carbohydrates that you can find. We're going to get into nutrient density a little bit later on. But here, so you understand what I'm talking about, I mean the carbohydrate, starchy foods that are going to be the most loaded with nutrition. Think about it. Brown rice versus white rice. Which is better? I'm sure you've guessed it. Brown rice, of course. What's better? Millet or white pasta? Millet, of course. It's a whole grain. The whole grain has the whole grain intact. You're going to get the bran and the endosperm. So you're going to get more protein, more fiber, and more vitamins and minerals. That's not only good for you for your health, but it's also good for you for maintaining satiety and fullness. You're going to stay fuller longer. So let's go back a step. When it comes to carbohydrates, we don't want refined carbohydrates like white bread, white pasta, and of course we don't want any candy cakes and cookies either. That's a given. What we do want is we want to get the majority of our carbohydrates from vegetables, a little bit of fruit, even a little bit of dairy if you eat dairy, and then a smaller amount of your carbohydrates should come from those starchier foods in their most whole form. When we get into the meal planning part, I'm going to get into the more specific details of what you should have in exact amounts. But that should give you a good enough understanding of how you can apply getting carbohydrates into your life and help other people do the same. The next macronutrient I want to discuss is protein. I can't tell you how often someone will come into my office with a food journal and say to me, before I've even commented, I know, I shouldn't have had the steak, that was so bad. And I look at them and say, why not? Steak is a great way to get protein in. And they say, yeah, I know, but steak, it's bad, and I can't have red meat, and I probably got too much protein in. Here's the thing. I love me some protein, just like I love carbohydrates and fat. They are all super important. Remember, you need all of them. Here is what I think about protein. Too many people eat too much protein, thinking that I'm going to build some big muscles. Well, if you're not exercising to build those muscles and you don't need those extra calories, that protein is just going to turn to fat like everything else. You can overdo the amount of protein. That can also become taxing on your kidneys. On the other hand, many people stay away from protein thinking, I can't eat steak and I shouldn't get too much fish because there's too much mercury and I don't want to eat nuts because they have too much fat. So many people end up eating way too many carbohydrates and often the wrong types of carbohydrates because they're trying to avoid protein. Another thing I always see in my office is people say, I had a great bowl of oatmeal for breakfast, but then I was so hungry, so I stopped eating oatmeal for breakfast. And I say, well, you just had oatmeal with some water. Why didn't you throw in some nuts or some hemp seed in there to up the protein? Or have that oatmeal with a side of eggs? And they say, oh, that breakfast would be too big. And I say, you need your protein there. I like people to get protein at every single meal. That doesn't mean I want that woman who I mentioned at the beginning of this lesson on protein to have a steak every night. But I do want you to get protein at every meal. I like people to get a combination of animal protein and plant protein. That's just what I believe works the most for the most amount of people. That is not to say that you can't be an incredibly healthy vegetarian or vegan. I personally eat many vegetarian and vegan meals, but I also incorporate a certain amount of red meat and poultry and fish into my diet. That works for me. That works for the majority of the clients I have seen. Many times when people go vegetarian or vegan, they end up over consuming a lot of those foods that end up actually packing on the pounds. So I like to go for a more middle ground approach. I like people to get a lot of plant protein in their diet. You even get protein from vegetables. So think vegetables, nuts, and seeds. But I also like people to combine that with a little bit of animal protein, lean beef. And I like to go for the best sources like grass-fed beef. I believe that you should get a combination of animal protein and plant protein. And here's why. Animal protein is going to keep you really satisfied. Imagine a big bowl of quinoa for dinner, or with nothing else, or a big steak for dinner with nothing else. Which do you think is going to make you more satisfied? Probably the steak. Now, with that said, I don't think that either one of those is a healthy meal, but I do think that a beautiful kale salad sprinkled with some quinoa in it and a whole bunch of other veggies, and a dinner consisting of a small portion of a grass-fed beef plus a whole lot of other veggies and things, those two meals can make up a really balanced, healthy diet. I believe that you can absolutely be a healthy vegetarian and a healthy vegan, and I think that if you want to do it for health reasons or ethical reasons, you absolutely should. You just need to be really aware. Oftentimes when you go vegetarian or vegan, you find it difficult to get in adequate protein. And remember, protein is going to keep you satisfied. Protein is key to keeping you satisfied and controlling the amount of calories you consume. So when you're looking for plant-based proteins, they're often harder to find to get into your diet. And then what you end up doing is over-consuming the wrong type of other calories. Imagine being out at an Italian restaurant and you're just eating a big bowl of pasta. It's not going to satisfy you. And you know what? A meal like that ends up making you gain weight and not helping with your energy and not preventing disease. So if you do go vegetarian or vegan, you just need to be a responsible vegetarian or vegan and really make sure that you get in the right type of plant protein and enough of it. The other problem I also see sometimes when people are vegetarian and vegan is they get in too much processed soy. And I am a fan of a minimal amount of real soy products in your diet. I am not a fan of all of the isolated soy protein that you find in many meat-free burgers and chips and all of these other products. Even things like breads often have soy protein isolate in them just to up the protein. So that's something, vegetarian, vegan, or not, that everyone needs to look out for. Protein is key to being satisfied. When I think of protein, I think of one of my most favorite nutrition words, satiety. Protein keeps you satisfied. When you have protein at breakfast, you actually end up eating even less calories for the day. So that's why if you are starting your day with that bowl of oatmeal, make sure to have a small portion of the oatmeal with a protein source on the side, whether it be from nuts or hemp seeds or an egg on the side, or even an organic piece of bacon. You want to make sure you get a little bit of protein at every meal. I like people to get a combination of plant protein and animal protein. Some of my favorite sources are going to be wild organic salmon, grass-fed organic beef, hemp seeds, nuts and seeds like almonds, walnuts, and Brazil nuts. I like a combination of real protein because when you eat a combination of protein from plants and animals, your stomach is going to be satisfied, your palate is going to be satisfied, and your body will also be satisfied because you will easily be meeting all of your protein needs. Protein is key for, as I mentioned, staying satisfied, but it also is essential for you to have beautiful skin, hair, and nails. It's the main ingredient when it comes to repairing all of our cells, building muscles, building tissues. It's important for healthy bones. Protein is also what makes up enzymes and hormones. So basically, we need protein for our bodies to function at their best. Next up, fat. You probably think that fat is your enemy, but I promise you, fat is your friend. It's one of my most favorite things to tell clients because it truly is your friend. And not only is it okay to have a little fat, we actually need about a third, if not even a little bit more, of our diet to come from fat. When I make meal plans for people, they are always so surprised to see a little check mark by fat at every single meal and snack. That's because I am a big believer in fat. Fat provides you with satiety. We already talked about satiety with protein. You know what that is. It means it makes you full longer. You stay satisfied. Fat also makes food taste good. It's what adds to the palatability of food and makes your mouth water. It even adds to the smell of food, and we eat with all of our senses, so the taste and smell of food is really super important. Fat also keeps our skin from drying out and looking wrinkly. Fat is also essential in terms of absorbing fat-soluble vitamins. We wouldn't be able to absorb those vitamins without fat. Fat also insulates our organs. Yes, I know you're thinking that you got too much insulation going on, but the fact is that if you fall down on the street when you're going for that run trying to lose weight and you don't have any fat around your organs, you're gonna have some big major damage. So you need a little bit of fat. Fat also plays a critical role with brain health. And if you don't have enough fat, well, your memory is going to decline. So if your brain functioning properly and burning fat and food tasting good isn't enough of a reason to eat fat, I can give you a whole bunch more. Please refer to the handouts that go along with this video. So if a third of your diet should come from fat, what types of fat should you be getting? Another mistake people often make. They're only eating olive oil, or they're getting fat from all different types of packaged foods and they think, oh, well, a little fat's okay. But that fat is coming from hydrogenated oils. Similar to protein, I like a variety with fats. And here's why. You need a whole bunch of the healthy types of fats. Monounsaturated fats, polyunsaturated fats, and specifically within the polyunsaturated fat category, you need those omega-3s, the essential fatty acids. What I don't want you to get is the unhealthy hydrogenated oils and trans fats that are found in still in some margarine type products and in all those packaged processed foods. One thing I really like people to get zero of in their diet, and I don't say that about many things, but you should get zero trans fats. Hydrogenated oils, that is one of the key reasons I have people read labels. I like them to look at not just the nutrition facts, but the ingredient list and look out for anything that says partially hydrogenated or hydrogenated. Because even if something only has a little bit of fat, let's say 1.5 grams of fat, if it comes from hydrogenated oils, it's the worst type of fat. The type of fat that's going to cause inflammation in your body and put you at risk for a whole host of diseases. When it comes to reading the nutrition facts label on the back of a package, you want to look at fat, where it comes from, monounsaturated or polyunsaturated, but you also have to read the ingredient list. Looking at the nutrition facts panel without reading the ingredient list is like buying a home without going inside. You need both. You need to look at the calories and the proportion of nutrients like carbs, fats, and protein, but you also need to look at the quality, where those nutrients are coming from. I'm going to talk a lot more about that, and there are handouts to go along with this, but when I think of fat and unhealthy fats, I always think about that example because it's the one place that I tell people absolutely no hydrogenated oils. So what about saturated fats? Saturated fats is another type of fat that people are very confused about. We have heard for so many years that saturated fat is the devil, the worst thing in the world, worse than white bread for you. But here's the deal. Research is showing that even a little bit of saturated fat is not only not bad for you, but actually even plays a role in your health, in preventing heart disease and many other conditions and diseases. But here's the thing, I'm not telling you to go out and eat a stick of butter. There is a time and a place for a small amount of saturated fat. grass-fed butter, grass-fed beef, even chocolate has some saturated fat in it that's actually healthy for you. Again, please refer to the handouts and you will get a whole lot more of the nitty-gritty on why there is even a role for saturated fat in your diet. One of my favorite ways to get a little bit of saturated fat in the diet is from coconut. Coconut is filled with MCTs, medium chain triglycerides. This is a type of saturated fat that actually has been shown to be beneficial for your overall lipid profile and also do everything from improve the health of your skin to even help burn fat more efficiently. So before you run away from here and start eating coconut, red meat, and dark chocolate, I want to remind you that I do not want all of your fat to come from saturated fat. As a matter of fact, I really want the smallest amount to come from saturated fat. I'm just explaining that there is a role even for the healthiest types of saturated fat in your diet. So where do I want you to get the majority of your fat from? From the healthy fats like monounsaturated fats and omega-3s, the essential fatty acids. Here is why I want you to focus on those types of fats. Let's start with the monounsaturated fats. Monounsaturated fats are most famous for being in avocado and olive oil and nuts and seeds. Monounsaturated fats help improve your good cholesterol and lower your bad cholesterol. They're good for all of those other things I just mentioned, like your skin, burning fat, keeping you satisfied. They're also found in the places that are loaded with so many other wonderful nutrients. Let's just take that avocado, for example, loaded with monounsaturated healthy fat, also loaded with the antioxidant glutathione. Glutathione helps block the absorption of the bad fats. It's also loaded with fiber, which helps us stay full and rids our body of the bad fats. So when you think about getting the monounsaturated fats, they're not just good for you on their own, but they're also in places with other vitamins and minerals and phytochemicals that are helpful to you in many other ways. Almonds is another example. There's monounsaturated fat in there, but there's also vitamin E and even calcium. So monounsaturated fats are found in places where you're going to find so many other amazing nutrients for your body. My other favorite fat is omega-3 essential fatty acids. They are essential because our body doesn't make them on our own. And here's the thing with omega-3s. As we age, our whole bodies age. It's not just our skin. I mean, I do this to myself every once in a while and look at my skin aging. And it's not just our hearts and our bellies, but as we age, even our memory and our brain starts to age. And omega-3s are the fats that are the most associated with reducing the amount of brain-related age decline. So in other words, if you want to stay smart and sharp, you got to get your omega-3s in. Omega-3s are super important because they are the fat that is most shown to help with age-related brain decline. Meaning, if you want to stay smart and sharp, you got to get your omega-3s in. They are even associated with boosting your memory and cognition. So where do you get those amazing omega-3s? Well, there are a whole bunch of places. A few of my favorite is wild salmon, flax, chia seeds, even seaweed, and even things like spinach have some omega-3s in them. I have a whole list of all my faves, which also includes omega-3 fortified eggs, attached to this webinar. You probably have also heard about polyunsaturated fats. The reason I don't focus so much on polyunsaturated fats is because if you focus on the two that I love, monounsaturated fats and omega-3 essential fatty acids, you are going to get those polys in. So when you eat things like nuts and seeds, you're also getting some polys. Foods are a combination of nutrients. So things like almonds have a combination of poly, mono, and saturated fats. So you're really going to get adequate amounts of polys if you focus on eating the healthiest types of fats. Also, as Americans, we get too many polyunsaturated fats in our diet and not enough of the monos and the omega-3s. So focus on those monos and omega-3s. Know that there's a place in your diet even for certain saturated fats and you're going to be good to go. So now you know all this information about the macronutrients, but probably like it's difficult for yourself, it's even more difficult to then explain to somebody how to put all those parts and pieces together. So you know which carbs you should be eating. You know which fats are the healthiest. You know where you want to get protein from, but how do you put it all together for someone? There are four things that I focus on when someone comes into the office for the second time. The first time they come into my office, I go through a whole long intake, asking them questions about stress and sleep and their own personal diet history. I even ask them questions about how organized their fridge is. But in that second session, before I start to give them a specific meal plan, the four components of the meal plan, the philosophy in which this entire meal plan is based upon, are these. Your HQ, which stands for your hunger quotient, proportions of nutrients, so proportions of carbs, fats, and protein, portions of food, because although I do not like counting calories, you still need to have an idea of portions. And finally, nutrient density, how jam-packed each food they are going to consume is with nutrients. So let's review them one more time. HQ, proportions, portions, and nutrient density. Those are four things which I want you to understand to the nth degree. And then you'll be able to share that incredible knowledge with so many people. And I'm telling you, if people can nail that, they don't need to ever worry about calories or the specific details of any individual food again. HQ stands for not headquarters, although we are in the Nutritious Life headquarters right now. It stands for hunger quotient. And what I'm referring to when I refer to your HQ is on a scale of 1 to 10. 10 means you are so famished you could eat your arm or even a small child. 1 means you are so stuffed you're in that mindset of, I am never eating again. Your pants are unbuttoned at the table and you are swearing off food for the rest of your life. Come on, we have all been there. I don't like 1 and I don't like 10. I want you to be between a 4 and a 6 all the time. 6 is slightly hungry. You're hungry, you're starting to feel a little bit hungry, but you're not getting growly and irritable. 4 is you're slightly satisfied. You could maybe even have another bite, but you feel okay. And you feel confident stopping at a 4 because you know that you can have a snack a couple hours later. I can't tell you how many times I look at a food journal and I say to someone, were you really hungry? Is that why you ate the soup and the sandwich and the salad and the handful of nuts? And they'll say, no, I was just worried that I wasn't going to eat again until dinner and I had a really busy afternoon. I call that fearful eating. That is one thing I want you all to think about right now about yourself and about any clients you work with. Do you have or do they have fearful eating? It is so common. Many of us don't even realize that we do it. It's just become part of our normal behavior. It has been drilled into our heads that we shouldn't eat between meals and that if you're dieting and eating healthy, you shouldn't snack. So what happens is we end up sometimes eating more than we even need to eat because we're afraid we're not going to eat. Chances are you are going to be able to either A, pick something up somewhere, even if you are on the go, but the better option B is to always be prepared. And if you are always prepared, you don't need to have that stress or fearful eating and say, oh, I better finish this salad because I don't know what I'm going to eat again. Because even something as benign as a salad can be loaded with calories. And even if it's not, even if it's a beautiful, healthy salad, you don't necessarily need to stuff yourself with those nutrients. You don't need to expand your stomach. Eat until you are slightly satisfied, being confident and knowing that you can have a snack later on. This is part of what I call food timing. You need to listen to your body and eat consistently throughout the day. So be an empowered eater, don't be a fearful eater, and be confident in listening to your body. I can almost promise you that if you start doing that right now, you are going to end up eating less calories. So even if you're eating a salad or a ribeye and fries, you need to listen to your body and stop eating when you're slightly satisfied. If you do that, even when you're eating the most indulgent food, even if it was a fettuccine Alfredo meal, you will never overconsume a huge amount. Now, of course, it's not just about not overconsuming. It's also about the quality of those nutrients, but we're going to get to that. So when it comes to HQ, listen to your body. Be a confident eater. Don't be a fearful eater. Be empowered knowing that you can have a snack in a little while. Proportions of nutrients is up next. And I have to say, I think this one surprises my clients the most when I say that they should have about equal parts carbs, fat, and protein. That's right. carbs, fats, and protein are all equally important. I talked about that at the beginning of this video, but I want you to understand that they are not only all important in their own percentage of your diet, they're all actually equally important. I want about a third of your calories to come from carbs, about a third of your calories to come from fat, and about a third of your calories to come from protein. Okay, carbs gets a little bit of an edge and a little less protein, and sometimes a little more fat than that, but I don't really like exact percentages anyway. I didn't like math in school, so we have to think a little bit more gray here. And the reason why you don't need to worry about the exact percentage of carbs, fats, and protein, because even if you were a mathematician, you could never figure it out exactly. And you know what? Even if you could figure out the exact percentage of carbs and protein and fat you have every single day, it just doesn't matter that much. We just need to be aware of the proportions. This is the part of the lesson when I'm speaking to a client that I remind them of where you find carbohydrates, where you find fat, and where you find protein. And I write out a little chart, which you have attached to this webinar so you can even see it yourself. And I show them that even starches, fruit, vegetables have carbs. But guess what? Those starches also have some protein. They also sometimes have some fat. And then they learn to look at the whole thing from a more holistic view. They start to see that, okay, so if I have a starchy food here and I have a piece of fruit here and I have some protein here and fat here, this will all balance out and be about a third, a third, and a third. Refer to that handout, it'll be much more clear. But I just really want to remind you that you need to think about where you get your carbs, fats, and protein from. And remember, you don't eat those three nutrients. You eat different types of foods that are groups of those nutrients together. So you have to be able to look at it from a little bit of a bird's eye view or be a little more gray and not just think carbs, fats, and protein. I do not like counting calories. I didn't like math. I think it's boring. I like to get into the nitty-gritty of the more complex details of why food is healthy for you, and I like eating food more than I like thinking about calories. But I am a dietitian, and I do have to talk about it a little bit. So here's what I tell people when it comes to portions. You need to have a starting place for what a proper portion is. So I like people to learn about what a portion is a couple times. For example, measure out a third of a cup of rice a couple times. And you know what? The next time you go to make rice, you'll know what a third of a cup of rice looks like. But there are certain portions that are more important than others. Once people have a good overview of the bigger view of proportions, I can get into the nitty-gritty of portions. I don't like to tell people, you can only have a third a cup of this and a small this, because as I already told you, you need to listen to your body. And if you're listening to your body, sometimes, well, you know what? An apple and a half might do, and other times, a half an apple might do. You have to really be confident and learn to listen to your body. But with that said, portions are a good starting place. So for example, if 4 ounces of chicken is a great starting place for someone as a portion, I will show them what 4 ounces of chicken looks like. But then I will also tell them, if you are truly hungry and your hunger quotient tells you that you're slightly hungry, have another ounce of chicken. Have maybe even 2 more ounces of chicken. The same goes for veggies. When you're at a meal, with vegetables, I want you to fill up on them. Vegetables are loaded with water volume and fiber and, of course, a whole lot of nutrients. So I want people to fill up on their veggies and don't worry about the portions, unless, of course, those veggies are something like cream spinach and loaded with lots of other fat calories in there. When you're at a meal and you have your starting place for a portion, let's say it's a third of a cup of brown rice, 4 ounces of chicken, and a big bowl of sauteed spinach that just has 1 teaspoon of olive oil. Pretty basic meal, I know, but it's just an example. If you've been listening to your body and you're still a tiny bit hungry, I would rather you fill up on more veggies first, and then if you're still really hungry, go for a couple extra bites of chicken. The water volume and the fiber in the spinach is going to help fill you up and provide you with a lot of nutrients for not many calories. The protein in the chicken will also satisfy you. If you go for more of that rice, chances are you're going to overconsume calories much easier than if you were eating more spinach or more chicken. So when it comes to portions, I give you a starting place, and there's a chart attached to this webinar, which will give you that starting place and also give you a starting place for all of your clients. But aside from that starting place, you have to be confident in your HQ and listen to your body. Even the same person that has done the same exercise and eaten the same breakfast and lunch may have varying levels of hunger on any given night. You need to listen to your body and your HQ and let that help guide you as much as portions. But when it comes to those portions that you really need to pay very close attention to, your starch portions and your fat portions are going to be the ones that I want you to control the most. And that's because fat calories have 9 calories per gram. Carbohydrates and protein have 4. So as much as fat is so satisfying and delicious and good for you, it also can be easily overconsumed. Carbohydrates are easily overconsumed because they just don't fill you up in the same way that protein and fat does. So make sure that you have an understanding of proportions, and then also for portions, the starting place for you, and then you understand which foods you should go for more of if you still are a little bit hungry, and then, of course, listen to your HQ. So we've got HQ, proportions, portions, and finally we have nutrient density. Nutrient density is really all about getting the most bang for your buck. And I say it like that because I hate using that expression over and over, and we've all heard that term before, but really there's no better way to explain it. You can eat 100 calories from, let's say, jelly beans, or you could have 100 calories worth of a couple apple slices with a little bit of organic natural peanut butter. Those jelly beans, what are they going to give to you? Sugar, no nutritional value. And that sugar is not even going to fill you up. All it's going to do is increase your insulin levels and then cause you to take those sugar calories and store them as fat. You're not going to be full. You're not going to be doing anything for your health. You're actually going to be damaging your health. And guess what? You're going to go back probably for 3 more 100 calorie handfuls because you're not satisfied. The couple slices of apple with peanut butter, what's that going to do for you, you ask? It's going to provide you with fiber, protein, and healthy fat. 3 things that are going to help fill you up and also provide you with loads of nutrients. All of those nutrients are going to be not only good for your health, but they're also going to help you lose weight. So every time you eat something, I want you to think about getting the most nutrients you possibly can from the food you're eating. So something even as simple as a salad. Should you have the iceberg lettuce or should you have the kale salad? You should go for the kale salad. Now, I am not saying that an iceberg lettuce salad is a bad choice. Sometimes, personally, I even crave an iceberg lettuce salad. I just like the crunch of it, and I actually like how watery it is. Just some weird little thing about me. But I'm not saying that you can't ever have something that isn't loaded with nutrients, but for the most part, you want to go for the most nutrient-dense option because it's better for your health and it's better for your waistline. Okay, so now your head's spinning a little bit. You're thinking portions, proportions, nutrient density, HQ. I'm gonna pull it all together for you. If you listen to your HQ, have a greater understanding of the proportion of nutrients, and know that it's not so black and white and it's a little bit more gray, that you need a lot of protein, a lot of carbs, and a lot of fat to make your perfect diet. If you think about portions but don't stress about calories and go back to your HQ and have confidence listening to your body, and you think about eating the most nutritious foods, you're gonna have it all together. Think about it. Let's sit down to dinner right now. Okay, we know we need to listen to our body, so we're not sitting down unless we're slightly hungry. All right, sitting down to dinner, because I'm about a 6 right now. I'm slightly hungry. I could eat, but I don't want to eat the whole bread basket. I feel good and confident going into dinner. I'm going to choose a nice proportion of nutrients. I'm going to have a little thing of quinoa. I'm also going to have a big bowl of spinach salad with a little bit of avocado and a great balsamic dressing. I also have a nice 6-ounce piece of wild grilled salmon with herbs and spices on it. Okay, so I've been listening to my body. I sat down to dinner. I have a nice proportion of nutrients, quinoa, vegetables, salmon. So I've got my carbs, my fats, my protein. And you know what? I also have nice portions there. I might end up actually only having 4 ounces of the salmon because I don't even need the 6 ounces because today, I'm not that hungry. I didn't work out and I'm just not as hungry as I normally am. But also, wow, look at this beautiful plate of food I have in front of me. Wild salmon, I'm getting omega-3, essential fatty acids. I'm getting quinoa, which has complex carbohydrates, but it's also a seed. And I've got a spinach salad loaded with vitamins and minerals and healthy fat from that avocado. So this is a nutrient-dense, portioned, proportioned meal that I've listened to my body and followed my HQ, so I've eaten confidently and enjoyed every single bite. I've told you about the macronutrients and how I educate people on them, and I've told you about the four main components of my Nutritious Life meal planning philosophy. But here's the thing. When people come in the door, you have to remember that they are all individuals. And I talk about that with all the other registered dietitians in my office. Everybody is an individual. And I know it sounds so obvious, but the problem is we often forget about that. And we think, oh, we need to educate this person on carbs, fats, and proteins, and I need to give them a meal plan and tell them about why quinoa and salmon and spinach is good for them. But the problem is sometimes we forget that everybody has their own unique personality, their own unique lifestyle, their own unique stresses and sleep habits, and all of those other things that go into making up someone's life. That is why when someone comes into my office, I ask them so many questions in that first session. And then when I go back to do their meal plan, I don't just look at their food journal and say, oh, well, this person has high cholesterol and they're eating a lot of French fries. I also look at the bigger picture, their sleep habits, their stress, but what's really happening to cause the person to eat the bag of M&Ms or order the extra order of cheese fries? What is really going on? And we're going to get much more into this as the course goes on and we talk about emotional eating, but I really just want you to get an understanding of some of these things you should look out for. Here are a couple examples of how personality and life issues can affect what someone eats. I have a client that came in recently and she told me how she'd gone to the farmer's market and she got red peppers and cucumbers and zucchini and she'd bought all these wonderful vegetables. So when I looked at her food journal, I said, well, why did you have that snack bar in the afternoon? By the way, it wasn't even such a bad snack bar, but she has fresh vegetables at home and we talked about vegetables and hummus. So why was she going for the packaged snack bar? And she said, oh yeah, I have all the vegetables, but you know, I didn't even know how to cut them up. So this person never chops up vegetables, so she was intimidated, but really what I found out when I dug a little deeper is she's a really unorganized person. Her fridge is a mess, her closet's a mess, her desk drawer is a mess. She's really unorganized, which really just keeps her from diving in a little bit further and growing and even doing things as simple as cutting up vegetables. So it's really important to understand the person you're working with. And even if they say things like, I went to the farmer's market and got vegetables, they still may be hindered. And it's my job and your job to help people break down those walls. Another example, which I'm sure has happened to you and probably happened to people you work with, late night eating. How often is late night eating or just even post-dinner eating really related to hunger? Probably about 5% of the time. Most people are not hungry at that time, but they're eating for other reasons. What are those reasons? One of the most common problems that I see is that people eat after dinner and late at night. And listen, here's the thing. If you're listening to your HQ and you are truly hungry, you may actually need a snack. But most of the time, I would say about 90% of the time, people are not truly hungry at night. They are eating for other reasons. I had one client claim that they absolutely, no matter how well they ate during the day, no matter how much protein they had at breakfast, no matter how balanced their meals were, they were hungry every single night. So I listened to them and I said, okay, if you are truly hungry and your hunger quotient is at a 6, you should have a snack. I gave a couple great healthy options. A couple high fiber crackers with the teaspoon of natural peanut butter. We did apple slices baked with a little bit of cinnamon. I came up with a whole bunch of options. But what happened was this person just kept overeating, even the healthy options. And we all know healthy overeaters. One thing they had never shared with me was that they were in an incredibly stressful relationship. And every time they came home, the anxiety of their partner coming home caused them such anxiety that not only did they go to eating, but they actually craved crunchy foods. Often when we are angry or have anxiety or are frustrated, we actually crave crunchy foods. That was exactly what was happening to this person. We'll dive deeper into emotional eating when we go further along in the course, But I just want to make you aware now that remember, don't forget that every individual is a true, unique individual. And sometimes it takes a couple sessions or even a whole lot of sessions of working with somebody to really get to understand their big picture, what's really going on. It's not always about, well, they don't like whole grains or they don't like vegetables. It's often that they're maybe in a bad relationship or are a very disorganized person. You really need to look at the individual and address that as much as you need to address the nutrition.